true, that spiritual, actual, factual answers to questions he asking. You find them inside you, beside you, reciting the records of Kashuk. We laughing, we drafting the passion through fabric. It's time for that comedy, dramedy, all of the fanciest, catchiest acronyms. Listeners, listen, we traveling. Consciousness is always unraveling. The reading you're having is mapping you back to your natural habitat. Abracadabra, it's magic, let's pass it. To top it off, the host are the classiest. Now, what were you asking for? All of the answers, what? All the answers.
Good to see you guys.
Hey, baby.
Well, I just taught Learn to Read the Akashic Records class.
Yeah.
All weekend. And I have to say, it was so fun and fulfilling. And like everybody was so good and attentive and good at it. And even the people who struggled and were like, I don't know if I'm getting anything. And I don't know if I believe this is working. And I feel like a piece of shit. I was able to help them and support them and move them forward from where they were. Just felt like successful teacher weekend, which feels so nice.
Isn't that an amazing feeling? That is, when we can actually put a pin in what we do well and say, I'm fucking good at that shit. Not like in an ego that fuck yeah, I'm awesome way, but just a way that goes like, oh yeah, that's like that alignment thing where you know you're in alignment because you're just like, oh, that's how it's supposed to go.
Exactly. 100%.
Yeah.
Also, I just love seeing people light up to the light work specifically. You know, when they discover that they themselves can have a connection, mm-hmm. they themselves can get answers and guidance. And it's just very empowering, but enlightening at the same time. Like I have this thing where sometimes I feel like when I'm doing empowering work, quote, like even some improv coaching or like what we do through ACT with corporate people, it's kind of draining. In a way, because you're sort of like a cheerleader for people's ego.
Yeah.
You know, whereas this is like teaching people how to let go of all of that and just receive. And then in so doing, they get confidence that comes through the spirit and the soul, which feels to me different. It feels like peaceful and enlivening at the same time, such that I'm actually enlivened by the work. I'm not exhausted.
Yeah.
And I don't know, that was an interesting thing to realize this last year with my work at Stanford was I was like, man, it feels pretty patty on the backy to say to people I teach at Stanford, but I am tired of this. Like it was not soul enlivening. It was just starting to really drain.
I understand. Like in the past when I've done certain types of like corporate work or like bringing acting into some other context, it's felt a little like make it work. Like, yeah, it applies, but it's like, I do feel a little, it doesn't feed my soul because I don't actually think I'm feeding their soul. Whereas I got to be honest, like the work I've done with, for example, Speechless, there's something about the way that is approached that I do feel totally in alignment with.
Wow.
And I believe in what I'm sharing. And as a result, most of the time when I'm working with a client, especially the one-on-ones, it feels like I feel bolstered at the end of it. I go into it dreading it because like, oh, it's going to be hard work. I have to teach a corporate person how to blah, blah, blah. And inevitably, if it connects, if it feels like I am actually freeing them up, like you said, like helping them find their alignment to something, it's not about that they can now do a better presentation for their product. It is. But what I actually helped them do was find their connection to their own integrity and their own being. What's the word? You know what I'm word?
Authenticity.
I don't know why sometimes that word won't come into my brain, but that's the word. Yeah, finding their authenticity, which is ultimately the goal of like all the work we're doing.
Totally. Oh my God, that's so cool. Yeah. That's so great. Totally, totally. How are you, Des? I miss you. I feel like I haven't talked to you directly in a minute. I just wanted to say hi.
I'm doing well. Thank you. I've been, I don't know. I had a really hard time coming down off of the holiday craziness, just the, you know, in these COVID times, I'm already doing enough extra parenting that, you know, and here we are almost at the end of February. And I feel like I'm just finally like back into a little bit of the groove of things. I haven't smoked in a month. So
yes.
What?
Yeah. As I put another piece of nicotine gum in my mouth. Yeah, that was like my goal for February. I was like, nothing matters. You know, ice cream by the pints, whatever. I'm just not going to smoke. And here I am. I've made it like 4 weeks flew by.
Wait a minute. Come on.
That's
Come
it.
On.
We got to give it up. Give it up. Keep on.
And it as listeners of the show know, you know, it's all about my oxygen level, just the deep breaths that I take now and just knowing that that oxygen is getting all the way into my bloodstream and not just bouncing off the tar.
A tarry membrane that just filters out the oxygen and rejects it.
Yeah, thanks for asking. Things are good. Things are good. I'm grading on a curve a little bit, but you know, I've been in a real just kind of down bitchy mood the last month, and you know, I knew it was gonna pass, but I still had to live through it, and so now it's kind of in the rear view, and it's like, all right.
I mean, quitting smoking, man, for some people it's the one that just. We all have our thing that just hooks in that won't unhook until it does. But smoking can be such a hard one for people. I have a friend who, an actor friend in Sacramento, actually, he tells a story of like when he quit smoking, he said, I had to learn how to do everything again. He said he felt like he couldn't drive a car because he was like, when your fingers aren't doing this gesture where you pull the cigarette to your mouth, and you're driving at the same time, like, I don't know what to do. And he felt awkward driving. And then when he would like talk to people, he just was like, where do I put my hands? And I don't even have anything to say. What was I ever saying? He like had a full neurological rewiring go on. And it was like pretty painful for him for a bunch of months. So
yeah, you're at a bar with friends and you're like, I have to sit and stay inside the whole time. I'm like,
yeah, yeah.
I don't walk outside during the evening.
Right. And break up the tension and find a release somehow. Yeah.
Mine were because I smoked cigars and I didn't want to do it around anybody. Like this has been my dirty, like I smoked a long, long time ago, but this habit all came up in the last year all over again. And, you know, Kelly knew I was doing it, but, you know, and the teenager isn't an idiot, but this has been kind of my secret. And so I would sit behind the house and listen to podcasts and play phone games. And so that was what I had connected to it. So I am like weeks behind on podcasts and I have deleted all of the games on my phone. So that was the only thing I had to relearn as far as what to do with my hands and editing. Like it was just my like, that was what got my ass out of the chair once an hour when I was editing.
Right.
And so now I'm like, you know, I sit down, I watch 15 minutes of Dexter or something instead.
Yeah.
Go back to editing.
Whatever we need, right? I've probably said this on here before, but my old therapist used to call it regenerative dissociation. We all need some regenerative dissociation. I'm big into it with TV at night. Like I go to bed and I know that when I get in that bed, I'm watching some episodes of something and it is my time to not be very conscious and I am fine with it.
What's your sleep show right now?
My what?
What's your sleep show right now?
Okay, here's how it works. If I've just finished a series and don't have anything new because nobody has said, oh my God, you have to watch the whatever, which is how I choose most things. I'm back to the new girl, forever the new girl. I watch episodes over and over. They make me, that show makes me feel peaceful and happy and cozy and like everything's good with life.
That's Bob's Burgers for me. If I need comfort, I'm Bob's Burgers because it's just, oh, good.
Oh, speaking of, oh, good and shows. My new man friend and I watched the pandemic episode of South Park, was an extended 45-minute episode. I have to say, like, there was some very pleasing 17-year-old boy humor in that episode. And you know how I like to get down with my farts and my perps and my poops. I want so badly to tell you the main joke of the thing, but I can't because you've got to watch it. It's so stupid.
All right. And there's our plug for the day. Go watch the pandemic episode of South Park.
Yeah, oh, it's really funny. And it's really smart, too. I love that show sometimes.
Oh, well, I'm thinking of it. Total change of subject. But I just said plug. Our awesome songwriter, Carlos.
Yeah.
Wrote, you know, his album has dropped and people should go freaking MC Infinite. And the album is called,
I remember it sort of because I was like, my white lady grammar voice in my head was like, that's not grammar dramatically. It's like, what? Okay, we're all going to find it.
Critical minded.
There you go. Critical minded.
Well, it's a play on the idea of critically minded.
Of course it is. I was just being like a gnarly weirdo.
Yeah, but it's good. I listened to most of it. We got a little preview. I got a preview version of it because we both did. We donated to the...
Where'd you get your preview version? I didn't get it.
It would have been in like an email to the people that donated. And then you click a link and go to a thing and you type in a word and then you download it.
But I didn't get that email.
You probably did, but it would have come from like the fundraising place, whatever it was, fundraising thing. I'll send it to you. I'll forward it to you.
Okay.
And it drops officially tomorrow. So the 22nd, Monday, the 22nd, I believe is when it's actually officially being released.
For the listeners, that was 6 days ago.
Right. If you're listening to this on the day it is released, 6 days ago, Critical Minded was released on this day in history, 2021. 2021, you guys. 2021.
Okay, speaking of 2021, someone said to me the other day, I was talking with this kid who runs this coffee shop in this part of Durango that is like an up-and-coming cute little neighborhood. And he was like, yeah, you know, they're set to have some, he said, like 350 new houses in this area by 2035. And I was like, when did it become a thing that we're talking about 2035 as a time when things will be done by
that we're caring about? Oh yeah, I'm thinking about 15 years in the future.
Wait, 35 minus 21 is 14 years.
Yeah,
14 years is not that far away. That's 2035,
which sounds way more like the future than 2021 does.
Yes, 2035. I can't even get it in my head.
But let's also like think about all the movies we watched when we were kids, like, you know, Judge Dredd or movies that were set in some dystopian future. And we have passed the time of most of those movies.
Okay, really? Have we? What about Blade Runner? When was that supposed to be happening?
It was supposed to be 2019, I believe.
No.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
Wow.
You know, obviously 2001 A Space Odyssey was like, but there's a timeline. If I can find it, I'll bring it up. But it's super fun. It just has like all the sci-fi movies and the dates they quote occur.
Oh my God.
And like most of them are, a ton of them are in the past.
Oh my God. That's incredible.
We've passed Back to the Future.
Oh yeah.
That's easy.
Yeah.
But we've passed most of the future movies.
I did not know that. And that is incredibly amazing.
Yeah. And most of the shit, of course, hasn't happened anywhere near. Like, we don't have air cars. We don't have Jetson cars.
Yeah. I think we will.
Probably.
Do you think we will?
I mean, if we can find some form of energy that isn't fossil.
Lots of people are working on
solar
that.
Air cars.
Pew. Pew, pew, pew. Yeah. I mean, the self-driving thing, that's next, right? That'll be.
Yeah. I don't like it. I'm weirded out by a self-driving car.
How come?
I don't know. It just seems unneeded and wrong.
Okay. Dangerous or?
It feels like a piece of autonomy that, like, I get it, like, on rails. I could dig it with, like, subways or trains. But when you kind of, like, cars aren't on rails. They can go anywhere they want. They theoretically are supposed to stay on this piece of the road. But they can just go, like, beep, 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 up on the, you know, through the houses, whatever. And because of that, I feel like if you're making it hackable or making it something that people could just be like, it is not in our control at all. Like, people could just start like driving cars through, you know, I know on the TV shows they hack cars all the time anyway, even not self-driving cars, but I don't know if that's actually a possible thing to do.
No, that's a good point. It's like, what if you make an enemy and that person's like, don't worry, she's going to Pizza Hut now. Let's drive her into
she's
that
going through pizza. She's going to the drive-through of
Pizza Hut. Exactly. Well, in fully other unrelated news, I was listening to our podcast again. What happens is it comes on automatically when I finish whatever I'm listening to. You know, it just goes to ours. I don't know why. But anyway, first of all, I always enjoy the theme song. I'm really proud of Carlos and that theme song. But also, I had notes for myself again. I was like, man, I really thought it's so interesting how you hear yourself when you're talking is so different from how you sound when you listen, because this is going to sound awful, but I experience myself as being like really attentive and engaged, and I care about you, and I'm really, my heart is open, and I'm so open to everybody's ideas, and I'm so happy to be here. And I listen to that thing and I'm like, all I do is fucking interrupt everyone. I'm saying, uh-huh, right, yeah, on top of every fucking word you say. And I'm just like, and I sound like an angry bully a lot. And I don't feel like one. I feel good and I don't feel like I'm pushing people. But when I listen, I'm like, oh.
What is wrong?
Oh, does...
Having edited thousands and thousands of hours of podcasts, it comes off different in just audio form, the acknowledgement when people are talking. Like an uh-huh. Like if you're sitting at a bar with someone and they're talking, you go, oh yeah, it's very conversational. But when you're in a pair of headphones and you're listening to basically a monologue and then someone else goes, yeah, they're like, shut up and listen, lady. Like, I think that's more us. Like I think even listeners thousands of miles away, when they listen to it, they're like, oh, listen, they're having a conversation and there's another person there acknowledging it. I don't think it comes off like that, but I totally, when I'm editing it, I feel the same way. And I struggle with what acknowledgements to leave in to conversationalize it and what to take out to leave the monologue pure. So
that's my new note. Thank you. Yes, I agree. Because whatever our intentions are, that if it doesn't land that way, it doesn't land that way. You know, the impact is as equally as important as the intention. And like, I've got a new commitment to myself that I'm going to try, which is when you guys are talking and I'm agreeing and I'm enthusiastic, as I frequently am, like I'm doing today, I'm going to do a lot of hand gestures that express agreement and nodding and eyebrows raised. And yeah, a lot of like Arsenio arm, thumbs up, so that I can acknowledge you on the video, but on the freaking audio, it's not going to sound like every second.
That's how I perceive it. That kind of goes to what we were talking about last week with Rachel, which is that idea of like, I think I'm being so one thing and I'm actually conscious of it and I'm actively practicing something. And then someone else perceives it as like, wow, you're really aggressive. And I'm like, wow, it was literally the opposite of what every ounce of my being was intending. And so I'm wondering if some of that is even hearing one's own self back reflected, you can hear a little bit of other people's perception of those things. And also we're our own worst enemy when it comes to listening to our recorded voice.
Of course, I know. It's just also just listening to other people's podcasts. There's a couple comedy podcasts I'll lean in on sometimes. And I'm like, I have to turn it off after 15 minutes because oftentimes, like I notice that there's like a certain style of comedy podcast where there's three people in the studio and they're all talking at the same fucking time. And I have to turn it off because I can't. And they're all yelling because they're all comedians.
Yeah.
So they're just like, me, I'm saying me, talk me. And I'm like, bye-bye, I'm out.
Yeah. I had the nice experience of listening to the most recent episode and having a reaction of actually being pleased by the sound of my own voice, which is rare.
Well, that's great.
Yeah. I was like, oh, I like how I'm sounding right now. I'm sounding a little like, you know, I don't know. Yeah, it was a good sounding voice. Whereas usually I'm like, I think I sound like this. Like, I think I sound like this, sort of. I think this is how I perceive my own voice.
Oh, no. Like nasal and...
like froggy, a little bit froggy.
Nerdy and froggy and nasal.
And a little bit splainy.
Oh, God.
Like I'm always just saying, well, actually...
Yeah, froggy and explainy. I hear you, but I've never ever heard you that way. Not ever once.
It's stories, narratives we tell ourselves.
I know, but Desmond just confirmed my inner judgments and my inner narratives. He's like, yeah, shut up, talk less, don't talk, shut the fuck up. I'm like, what? You're supposed to be like, no, it's not like that, but it is.
Well, and if you were in the studio together, it wouldn't. Your timing would be better too, because that's part of the problem on the recording and the Zoom and the editing and the timing is that if you're facing each other, usually your uh-huhs are and this is for everybody. This isn't you. It's everybody. Your acknowledgments are a little better timed, whereas in a recording, a lot of times that gap where you're would comes in a little late because of the latency, and then you're talking over the beginning of their next point instead of nailing it.
You know what's, I just was realizing, it's funny, usually when you hear the person, the sound engineer or the producer or whoever's the person behind the scenes on a podcast, everyone that I can think of right now, I'm trying to rack my brain and see if I could break this mold, but they're usually like a super introvert who doesn't really want to be on a microphone. So it's always like, it'll be like, what was it that happened last week, Rob? And the engineer will be like, you guys came on and you're a little bit late. Like they're real fucking quiet and introverted and they don't. But with Desmond, he's like, yeah, so anyway, I'm one of you. I'm you and we're the same.
I'm also a podcast host, just so
exactly.
You know.
Exactly. I know. It's just fun.
I love it.
I was just talking to Scott about that today, how much I need to get my own show back, because there's a version of myself that only comes out on the microphone, and to throw it in the middle of your show or jump in on a Truth Not Trends note, like, yeah, there's an expression that I have when podcasting that I, and that might be part of my mini depression I went through, was not having a show for 4 months and just like, where does this energy go?
Yeah, you got to put it somewhere, right?
Let's get it back. Let's get our listeners to clamor for the one they want to return. You know, call in, let us know which of the previously hiatus podcasts. We have Apocalypse Now, we have the Time Bandits, Chrononaut,
Time Pop.
We have the one about Rotten Tomatoes difference in things. What's that called?
Rotten Popcorn.
And you have Apocalypse Now. You got three options at least. To pick from. If you can only pick one, listeners of our show, which would you like to have return?
Thank you for that.
Super good.
Are you guys ready for the real third leg of your show?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, yeah, we didn't find a theme yet, but it'll emerge with Baruch.
It's chit chat. That's our theme.
That's right, baby. And you're chewing gum. You have no fear. There he is. Beautiful, beautiful man.
This guy's here.
Baruch.
This guy's here.
Hi.
Hey. Oh my God, look at that background.
Yes.
I'm trying to find the right one.
Well, the listeners don't know, but Baruch is moving through all of his different obsessions. He's got X-Men. He's got Adventure Time. He's got Frida Kahlo. He's got Man Butt.
Let's leave that
he's
one.
He's got...
I like Wrestler Ass.
I don't know who that is.
Wrestler Ass. Where's the Wrestler Ass?
Katie wants the wrestler butt, wrestler so you need ass. To go back to that.
Thank
there you, go.
You. Jesus. I had to say that like 16 times to get you to do it. Look at that leather clad ass right there.
Finn Balor has, like, he's like a wrestler, whatever, but there is a movement. There is a fan base just for those buns. I mean.
How could there not be?
Also, he's like a straight wrestler that has like a big gay following and he knows it and he's totally fine with it. And during one of his matches, he came out with like a rainbow t-shirt with his logo on it and asked all of his gay fans to walk on stage with him.
Aww.
And I wanted to be there just behind him, supporting him, you know, just telling him I'll follow you wherever you go, but mostly speaking to his butthole, not him.
He's
great too. He's a great wrestler. I hear he's like famous or something, I don't know, but that butt, you know. So some straight guys love the attention, some straight guys are like, I don't need that attention. And so it just depends on the straight guy, I guess.
I hear that. Do you nice to meet you, by the way.
Hello. Yes. Actually, let me turn this off so I can actually, because I was just looking at my background, thinking about Finn Balor's butt. Hi, Katie. How are you?
Nice to meet you. Okay. I want to get it right. Is your name Baruch or Baruch?
I've been going by Baruch. So like Barack Obama, but with a U.
Baruch. I love it. Thank you.
Yeah, but people that meet me from other parts of my life, like when I met Cassidy, I was probably going by Baruch, just because like when you move to this country as an immigrant and people just start saying, yeah, your name's Baruch, you kind of go, sure, I want friends. And then that lasts sometimes through college. And then after college, you're like, wait a minute, silly white people, my name can be whatever the fuck I want.
Wait a minute. So, anywho, okay. When did you When did you move here and from where?
I came here from Toluca, Mexico. I was born in Toluca, Mexico. And then when I was 9, I came to the U.S., crossed that border, came here to steal all your jobs and steal all your boyfriends and husbands and, you know, eat all the donuts I want.
And how's that going for you?
Well, I mean, I've eaten a lot of donuts, clearly, and I've slept with a lot of men, so it's going really well.
I wonder if you'll indulge me for just a moment in asking you a straight-ish lady to a gay-ish man question about how is it for you? Like, what I always think about gay men being friends with straight men and just like that thing that you just named where it's like, I guess I'm sort of wondering how often do you get the feeling of like, okay, I have to like play down my energy or be different so that this straight guy doesn't feel threatened, like I'm coming up on his jock when you're not even doing.
It's a really great question. Yeah. I guess to answer the question, it depends on where I am and what environment I'm in and what, like, I don't know, city or scene sometimes, because I grew up in the Bay Area, and the Bay Area, you know, whether we like it or not, is more friendly towards queer people and towards gay men. So I've always grown up with gay straight men that love the attention, or at least love to tease me about it, you know, or like to be like, I mean, it's like a cute little blessing when a straight guy goes, ah, if I was into boys, you'd be at the top of the list. And some of my straight friends are like, if I was into boys, I'd have to be really drunk, but I think you're great, bro. I just think you're... It also depends on what time in my life. So normally, like I said, just depends on the situation. And depends even if I like the guy. The worst thing ever that trumps everything else in that question or that thought is that, A, like the root of all that is that straight men usually think you're going to hit on them. And that is the most annoying, ridiculous fucking thing in the world. Because like 99% of the time we're not. So many gay men and queer people have grown up thinking, oh, if I hit on this person, they're going to kill me. So
yeah,
it is usually never like any time a straight guy has told me, well, I don't go to gay bars because I just don't feel safe. It's, I mean, yes, straight men do get assaulted, but it's so hard not to laugh because I'm like, really, really? Sure. Yeah, I'm sure you, oh, poor baby. Like, I don't want to make men uncomfortable, but really it's usually the other way around. Usually the straight person has the power and it's usually them. I mean, if I had a dollar for all of the time I've spent growing up and existing on this planet trying to convince straight men that I wasn't interested in them, I'd be a gabillionaire.
Yeah, that's kind of why I'm asking the question, because I really like imagine that would be a thing you'd have to navigate a lot.
So much that I've had to like make a joke about it, to the point where like when you do find the straight men that are nice enough to think it's adorable, you kind of cherish it. And I know that right now it's very popular to be like, a lot of woke gay men who I guess never relax are like, I'm tired of seeing straight men kiss each other for amusement. Two men kissing isn't, you know, funny anymore. I'm just like, straight men, like, yeah, please kiss each other as much as you want. But they're right. It is kind of 2008. You know what you should do? You should lick his ear. You really want to shock an audience? Why don't you lick each other's nipples, straight man? That'll really get us so shocked. You'll be so edgy, straight man. You know what you should do? Take off your underwear and just touch butts. And what's funny is a lot of my straight guy friends will joke and they'll be like, when you first met me, you had such a crush on me. And usually if it's not true, I go, which 90% of the time it's not. I'm like, really? Why do you think I had a crush on you? Well, you know, you were so nice to me and you were polite and appreciated me and listened to me and supported my ideas. And I was like, cool. That doesn't mean I wanted to do you. I actually wanted to do this guy, your friend. And they usually go, but you were so shy around him. Yeah, because I wanted to fuck his brains out.
Right.
And most of us flirty, nice, extroverted people, when there's someone we really want to bang, we usually just kind of like freeze up.
The guy assuming that because you were being nice and polite, you must have been interested in him and wanting to hit on him speaks probably to that man's, because that's how he is. He only gives women the time of day or respect or politeness. Kindness. Or any of those things.
Yeah.
If he wants to bone her.
Yeah.
So true.
So He's modeling it. It's the whole, like, you treat someone the way you want, quote, want to be treated, or you project onto other people the way you're perceiving the world.
Yeah, yeah. And it's just sad sometimes when you think about how, like, I mean, it is a lot harder. You know, I'll be the first to say it's so much harder to be, a woman, but toxic masculinity sucks. Like, you can have a penis and grow up with all that privilege, but, like, boy, does it suck being a dude a lot of times. I mean, aside from, yes, like, all the privilege that comes with it is nice. I like that I can walk through the Tenderloin at 4 a.m. and not get that messed with because I'm 6'3" with a beard. So I have that, like, male presenting privilege. But most of the time, being a guy just kind of sucks.
Well, because we're carrying that shit around. We're carrying around that shit that is toxic masculinity.
If you fall from that shit, you're a failure no matter what. Like, you know, you don't have a home with 4 kids and a dog. You're not providing for your, you're not being a dick everywhere you go and being the loudest person. You must be a homo. And I'm just like, yes, yes, I am.
Man, I feel like a lot of my life has been geared toward being freed from projections like that by doing my inner work. In other words, like, fucking A, the judgments and projections that we all get piled onto us for whatever you are and how you're supposed to be being. Like, when you say that list of things right there, I just feel so much empathy for every man in the world. And I just feel like, I'll give you an example. I was telling Cass before that I just taught this 2-day healing class this weekend, today and yesterday, 11 to 4, you know, a bunch of hours. And there were 2 men in the class of 10 people. And it was so beautiful to have them there. Excuse me, because these are 2 men who are deeply connected spiritually and also, like, have masculinity and cut trees down and do man, whatever that is, you know, but they have such warm, big, open hearts. And having them in the room, it was like all the women kept, you could just feel the women in the room relax and just like, thank you, guy who just said that thing, for just being not a dick, just in a basic, not a dick way.
Fair minimum.
Yeah. The bar is low, but.
I'm just, yeah, there's just, there. I also am noticing there is something about this area that I live in now, this southwest corner of Colorado. There's a lot of men who are open-hearted and gentle-spirited and, like, loving and kind. And there's also a lot of, like, cowboys on the horse and the fucking, all that kind of shit. So there's
even
real,
in San,
like,
Francisco.
Right?
And some of those cowboys on the horse are some of the deepest, most gentle souls, but
and sometimes still, not.
That sometimes too, they're fucking assholes.
Yeah.
That's true. Very... I was pretty lucky to grow up with, like, a lot. Like, when I came out in high school, my closest, well, I had 2 group of friends, and one was, like, a very Mexican, like, I went to church with them group. And when I came out, they disappeared. It was like a big shock for me, because it takes you a while to make friends when you're an immigrant. And also, if you're, like, a sad Aquarius, you know, it was just very hard for me to make friends.
Aquarius.
You too? Aquarius. Yay. Yeah. Also, you feel me. Like, we're very, like, people are like, Aquarians are very independent. And I'm like, yeah, that's true. But sometimes it's very lonely to be this self-sufficient.
Tell me about it. That's been a big part of my work.
Then when I came out, so the Mexican folks disappeared. And then the straight group of theater kids I was hanging out with, and they were all racist. You know, they were like, yeah, that's fine. They were like, yeah, we've been trying to figure out a way to get you to come out for a while, bro. And I was like, who, me? What are you talking about? I am incredibly masculine. They're like, yeah, but you're also really, like, naked men. So there's nothing wrong with that. Come here. Give us a hug. And I was like, okay, I'm going to smell your hair while we hug. That's fine. I've caught you doing that. It's okay. So it was just nice to have such, like, wonderful, straight, bro-y dudes be like, yeah, it's fine, dude. Max's dad's gay. Like, we're cool with him. Because it was the Bay Area. Like, it was, you know,
right.
The 90s
right.
Bay Area was very queer-friendly.
Well, that's cool. When you say they were all racist, can you say more about that? How, like,
I'm sorry. So? Oh, sorry. Not racists. My bad. They were racially diverse.
I heard it too. I was like, no. But they were all racist, but they were really good with me being gay.
No. Wow. What? No. So I need to enunciate better. They were of all races.
Of all races.
There, two of them were white. One was black. One was half Jewish, half Asian. One was Asian. That they were of all races. And some Latino. No. Oh my gosh. Yeah, I need to do tongue twisters before I get on these podcasts, I guess, because the podcast I was on before this also was like, what did you say? And I was like, God damn it. I guess I just need to, I don't know, do more exercise. Sorry about that. No, they were not racists.
Cool. Got it. I was just going to say, oh, let's unpack that. But okay, if it's not that, that's fine. So tell me a little bit. So tell for our listeners, Baruch, tell us a little bit about the work you do in the world. I know poetry is involved. Can you say a little bit about, tell us the things of you.
Yeah, I've been a writer for a while now. I guess most of my background is in performance. Poetry is what they used to call it, or spoken word. Now I just say I perform whatever I write, but I was, you know, I mean, I've been writing since I was a kid, like most people that write, and I always wrote poetry in high school. And even when I was studying acting and when I was trying to work full-time as an actor, I would go home and write poetry. And then finally, I made a decision to try to do it professionally. And, you know, that hasn't gotten me a lot of fame, but I do get paid pretty often to perform my poetry. So I see that as a, you know, as a win. And eventually I got a bunch of them published. I'm in a bunch of anthologies. I've been able to have a pretty fun time with it. I was not a big part, but I was a good part or chunk of the queer slam poetry scene here in the Bay Area for a while, which was very welcoming. It was a lot more welcoming than the theater world at the time in the Bay Area. And so yeah, I did slam for a long time. That also got me to travel a lot. Also, it paid more. When I decided to switch from being a full-time actor to a full-time writer, I was in a play at a really nice theater company, and that, you know, the rehearsal was 6 weeks and then the run was seven, whatever, you know, forever. At the end, I was going to get $120. And then I went to a poetry slam at the time, and for a 3-minute poem, I won $200 just in second place. And then I started getting feature gigs, and they were like, yeah, if you feature with us, you know, you'll get to read your poetry for 20 minutes. We'll give you $600. I know that's not a lot. And I just remember thinking like, whoa, why the hell am I auditioning for these shitty plays that I'm going to get $2 for at the end of a 6-month work? And then on top of that, deal with racism and homophobia that comes with a lot of that. I was like, I'm going to go over here. Also, there were more people of color in the slam scene at the time. And so anywho, so I used to do slam for a long time. I have 2 books of poetry out. They're little poetry chapbooks that I finally got published with Sibling Rivalry Press. And yay. I also run a bunch of my own literary shows because I love poetry so much that I like to celebrate other people's work. So I am a curator and an organizer, and I host a lot of literary events throughout the Bay Area, San Francisco. And I've gone on tour. I've done little poetry tours throughout the country. But I love the connection of the spoken word. I love the delivery, the reading, the you know, electricity behind a poet standing on a chair in a bar and screaming their poem into the crowd and moving people. Like, that's what I really love about the stuff that I do. And that's what I love teaching other people how to do. I've also taught a workshop called How Not to Be a Boring Reader, Boring Novelist Reader at a Literary Reading. Because boy, do novelists put people to sleep sometimes when it's their turn on the mic.
Oh, big time. So I hear you. I started my whole, I have these solo shows. I toured as a solo show performer for a long time. And like you, it was like, when I was younger, it was like how I earned my living, which was such a miracle to me and such a fun, awesome thing. But it all started with slam poetry. I had 7 poems that I was like, that were really deeply connected to me. And I built my first solo show as a narrative that connected the 7 poems. So the whole show was built around these poems. And I used to do the New Yorker in New York, and I did all the spots on the East Coast anyway, in Miami and New York mostly. Okay, so all I have happening in my brain is, would you be kind enough to read a piece for us?
Oh, sure. Yeah, like a poem?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, like, yeah.
What jumps out for you as the piece you'd love to share right here about whatever?
Let's see. I mean, there's so many. I mean, this is one I have people always request, and it's in my, you can find it in my book titled Lovers of the Deep Fried Circle. It's called Resting Gently on Your Unibrow. Sorry, Resting Gently on Her Unibrow. I have not had enough coffee today.
Dude, it's 7 p.m. You don't need any more coffee.
I love coffee, though. Okay. She had several self-portraits in which she painted an object on her forehead. If it was a small painting of her husband on her forehead, it would be titled Thinking of Diego. If it was a small painting of a skull on her forehead, it would be titled Thinking of Death. Oh, Frida, if only I could live as a small painting on your forehead, resting gently on your unibrow like this, with a small painting on my forehead of a donut. The portrait would be titled Frida Kahlo, Thinking of Baruch Porras Hernandez, Thinking of a Donut. And on top of the donut, where its little donut forehead would be, between the sprinkles, another painting of Frida Kahlo, and on her forehead, another painting of me, and on my forehead, another painting of a donut, and so on, and so on, and forever, and forever, and forever, and forever, and forever. The end.
Okay, here are the words I would use to describe that poem. Surrealist, hilarious, entertaining, layered, funny. What's the other word I want beyond surrealist? It has, oh, it's a little Escher-y. Like,
oh, thank
if
you.
Words could be an Escher painting, this has a...
Turtles all the way down. It's the Turtles all the way down poem.
I've tried to retire that poem several times, and I've been at shows when I'm about to walk off stage and people are like, don't have read a poem, how dare you? And I'm like, oh, okay, yes, sure.
So who knew that poets had like their, it's your free bird basically,
I guess, sort of. I mean, that and all the other penis stuff I do.
We're gonna need to hear one of those now.
Let's
you
see.
Don't know Katie very well, but and you've listened to a little bit of the podcast.
Yeah,
but
I have.
If you say the word penis, that avenue must be pursued.
Oh wait, no, those are jokes. Oh man. Hold on. Okay, here's a short poem.
Sweet.
Perfect.
Okay. If you haven't held your bestie's hand, while both on your knees, as you each go down on a fat ass D, are you two even friends? The end.
So, Baruch, what does spirituality mean to you?
To me personally, I guess it means. For me, spirituality is what science can't explain, but also is science at the same time.
That's interesting.
A scientist will tell me, I like that scientists will admit when they don't know something. You know, not to bring it back to poetry, but one of my favorite books of poetry is titled I Love Science. It's by a poet named Shaney Jane Maney, and her poem titled, there's one of the poems in there where the voice of the poem or she's talking to a scientist about the brain. And I think in the poem, they have a real brain on this like inspection table at either some science lab or something. And the brain scientist is going, well, we know this, we know that, we know this, we know that. And the students were like, what about this part? And the scientist kept saying, we don't know. What about this part? We still don't know about that. And the students kept getting more and more frustrated, going like, but how can you not know? And the scientist was like, do you want me to lie to you? And then I remember I was telling this story to someone at a university, and it was a very religious student who was like, yeah, people need words. And I was like, no, you need words. You need those words or lies. But I feel, and so in the poem, it's all about, when you tell me about gravity and molecules and atoms and how there's a lot we can't explain about that, like that to me is like, well, maybe that's the extra, my belief that one day we'll know, my belief that the unknown isn't scary. I see that as my own spirituality. My belief, the way science has told me there was an explosion at the beginning and it all might end. There might be a day when all the suns stop burning. I kind of, it doesn't terrify me. That to me is just so kind of beautiful, because there's also scientific theories that once the last red dwarf goes out, maybe a billion years after that, all matter is going to get sucked into one of the biggest black holes, and then that might explode again and restart the universe. That is one theory, which to me is almost like reincarnation. It's almost like God's way of saying it is never the end, even though it is, even though it may seem like the end. So spirituality to me, I guess, is a belief in science with a respect for what we don't understand, and with a pretty deep hatred of abusive organized religion. I've been told to say abusive organized religion as if there's a differentiation, I guess, because I don't want hate mail, but you know, or I don't want to get attacked. Like that's how, so that's the tough part about answering questions like that, because like I you know, I never know when some asshole's gonna find me on Muni and be like, I don't like what you said about religion, so now I'm gonna try to punch you on the 49, you know. And, so, which unfortunately has happened.
Are you familiar with the idea that religion and spirituality are quite different?
Yes, a lot of people have told me they're not, but I believe they are. Like, I see the word as religion as the organization and profit of people's beliefs. And spirituality, I've tried to use that word as the, no, there's so many people that don't need that, you know, like, so yeah, so my spirituality, I guess, is grounded on my belief in science, but also in my belief that there is some things you can't explain. There is some religious things you can't explain. Some things have happened to me that I know science can't explain. And even though there's 10 people that'll tell me that's a coincidence, it happens all the time.
Can you tell us what those things were?
Several stories. I mean, the most recent one is I have a really good relationship with my mother, and I've noticed a pattern that when she calls me and I don't answer, things stop working.
Huh.
Stuff just starts to happen. And the most recent one is I was, you know, doing all these Zoom meetings, and she was calling me and I was texting her back like, I can't talk right now, mom. I have a long work day. But she's a Mexican immigrant mother, and she's like, how dare you? You came out of my body. How can you not stop what you're doing and call your mother back? I gave you life. That's where she's coming from. And so that night I'm running an event. I'm facilitating an event. She calls me again and I don't answer. And then suddenly my internet's not working that well. And suddenly my neighbor starts like making all this noise. There's a truck. All this stuff starts going wrong. And I'm just like, it's probably my mom's witch energy doing shit. And then I go, Brooke, that's not even a thing. And then my power goes out.
Yeah.
And so I finally call her back and I'm like, hello, mom. She's like, are you alive? I'm alive and I love you, but I'm doing an event. I will call you tomorrow. Remember we talked about boundaries? She's like, oh yeah. Sorry. I can't figure out how to get on Netflix. Okay. I'll walk you through it once, but that's it. And so I walk her through it. She's like, thanks. Now I can watch Babylon Berlin. She's like, now I can finish Babylon Berlin. Okay, great, mom. I get off the phone. The power comes back on. My internet stops working. My neighbor stops making noise.
Wow.
And I finish the event. And like, so yeah. So I feel like stuff like that are little coincidences, but there's been so many of those, and so many of those with higher stakes. Just a bunch of stuff that aren't coincidences, you know what I mean? But from thoughts to feelings to premonitions to signs to like, there's so many like things that have happened in my life.
Could you tell us, if you don't want to, that's fully understandable, but I'd love to hear like another synchronicity story or another crazy, you said there were some stories where the stakes were much higher. Do you remember any of those?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many. Just like, which one would be okay. And a lot of people say this is just intuition, but like there was a night that I was just feeling very lost and feeling very like confused. And that's a whole nother conversation, but I needed to leave my house. I'm like, I'm going to leave my house. I'm going to leave my house. I'm going to go on. I used to go on a lot of night walks because I used to be stupid. And, you know, when you're in your 20s and 30s, you're like, I'm invincible. I'm going to go on a night walk all night through the city. And I used to live in the Tenderknob. So I would walk through the Tenderloin at like 4 a.m. because, you know, it was my city. And I love these people. And I made some friends. But anyway, I was going on one of my walks. And I heard all these rumors about Buena Vista Park, that it was a place to go be naughty with other men. Mm. And I just started walking forever. And I started walking towards Buena Vista Park. And I was like, why not? Why not take a nighttime, middle of the night walk into this hilly, woodsy area to maybe see something dangerous? I don't know. Or maybe see something sexy. You know, I feel... Now that I'm older, no, let's never take, I don't even like driving at night, even if I'm not driving. But back then I was like, let's do something dangerous. And I was about to go up the steps and just, I think I heard my mother's voice saying, is this really necessary? And I don't know if it was her voice, but I heard all these voices and something in my body saying like, this is stupid. You really don't need to go up this dark pitch black hill covered in trees in the middle of the city. It was almost like someone or something was holding me back. And I feel so, it's funny how I feel so stupid saying this. And so I went back home. I just walked back. And it was like, a part of me felt dumb. I was like, I'm going to feel so stupid tomorrow that I didn't go have an adventure or get a little thrill of putting myself in danger because I heard a voice that might have sounded like my mother's voice, but it had a tinge of my mother's voice, but it felt like someone was just gently caressing my chest and going like, you don't need to do that. So I went home, went to sleep, woke up, and it was something like, I don't remember if it was the next day or the day after that, but it was like man strangled in Buena Vista Park and then lit on fire to hide evidence.
What?
Wow.
I'm only laughing because it's horrible. And laughter makes the nerves go away. But it was like, you know, probably that wasn't going to happen to me. Might have happened. I don't know. But it was one of those, you know, I how old was I at the time? So I was like 28. You know, you're 28 and something like that happens to you, you know.
That's amazing.
It seems silly now. But back then I was like, whoa.
No. There's nothing silly about that. You do a lot of like acknowledging your own experience and then totally shutting it down.
Yeah.
And it's like, none of this sounds silly to me. That sounds like,
well,
wow,
thank
cool.
You. But you know, there were a lot of people that were like, that's ridiculous. Like you, oh, I love that one of my shady friends was like, you think a serial killer would have picked you in the dark? Yeah. Oh. I'm glad I listened to that voice. Maybe it was intuition. Maybe it was a sixth sense. Maybe it was my mother. Because here's how creepy it is. Like, you know, sometimes when I first moved to the city and she was super worried about me, I would be like about to do something really dumb and she would call me. And I would just out of nowhere, I'd be like, God, what, mom? And she'd be like, what are you doing? And
uh-huh. I'd be
like, nothing. I'm at the library praying. And she was like, 11:30 at night, there's no libraries open. And but part of me was so angry. Like, how does this little Mexican woman know that I'm about to walk into the back room of a bar drunk out of my mind? You know?
She is tuned into you. It sounds like it was her voice at Buena Vista Park.
I'm amazed you answered the phone. You could have just ignored it.
I often do, but when I do,
things break.
So, like, I was 18 with my first boyfriend, Robert, and we wanted to go to the Castro. We were like, we have to go. There's nothing gay. We were going to go to the Castro. And I was like, mom, I know you don't. She wasn't okay with me being gay at the time. And I was like, I know you're not going to like it, but Robert and I are going to the Castro. And she kind of did this like, tonight? No. And I was like, stop it. You can't stop me from being gay, mom. It's going to happen. And she was like, oh, I don't care about the gay thing. I just don't think you should go out tonight. I just have a feeling. And Robert was like, your mom's a little weird. I was like, I know. And so we get into his car and we were like, it's going to happen, mom. And then I think on the way to Bart, someone like pickpocketed him. And then we like try to chase the guy down and Robert was faster than me. And so the guy turned and like punched him in the face.
What?
And so we spent most of the time with like an ice pack on Robert's face. And then we were like, it's not going to ruin our night. It's not going to ruin our night. We finally make it to the Castro. We remember that we're 19 and no bar would let us in. All the bars were like, sorry, boys, it's not the 70s anymore. You can't sneak into this bar. We'll get shut down. So we end up just buying rainbow stickers that Does Your Mother Know and we go to Starbucks and just have a horrible time. Like all these old gay men were like trying to take us home, and we like weren't ready for that, even though we should have been ready for that. And then like I think a homeless person like spit on me, and then it just like kept bad. And then it got worse. We get lost. That's a whole nother story. We get lost. We make it back. And then when we get there, his car won't start. When we get to the BART station, it won't start. And then we start trying to, you know, I'm pushing it. I'm pushing his car. He's at the passenger seat. It starts pouring rain. And then I try to push his car again. I slip, I fall, and I hit my chin on the fucking floor, blood everywhere. And then this dude comes to pretend to start to push us. And I'm like, we really don't need help. And it's pouring rain, so he can't hear me. And he's helping us push the car to try to get it started again. It does not start. And when we're done, the man then robs us.
Jesus. All right. I want to interrupt because I actually would love to hear. I feel like, Katie, you probably have a lot of perspective on this guidance question that Baruch has been kind of peeing on and shitting down. But I feel like there's some meat here that I would like to hear some of your wisdom on. Do you not?
About what?
Just about this idea that, well, you have said many times, you've just told us four stories of very particular guidance that was received either from your mother or from your angels or whatever you want to call it. And then there's been a dismissal of the validity of it to a certain extent. But I just want to, I think my point in interrupting you, Baruch, was just to kind of take a moment. Let's amplify the reality of what you have just delivered to us.
Well, yeah, I mean, I hear you saying, Baruch, many stories, story after story after story, where you have what's called spiritual guidance. But I also, I'm assuming that because you've had such bad experiences with religion, maybe that's where you're getting this whole sort of like, yeah, but probably not. And it's just my head and it probably didn't happen and I'm going to make a joke about it. But I'm wondering two things. I'm wondering, do you have like, what happened with religion, and or what do you think that's about for you that you just want to like totally like deflect or tease away the things you experience?
I guess to answer that question, the second part is the teasing and joking is because there's been times that it has not worked. And
what do you mean?
Like I don't know. Sometimes when I hear when I feel the intuition or the voice, and I feel like I hear like when it's like that theory that you can't do something while thinking about it, and you can't think about it while doing something. When I've tried to feel that intuition or that sixth sense or whatever you want to call it, when I've tried to tap into those moments of whether that exists or not, it usually doesn't work. Now I respect them when they do happen because I just let them happen. And also because, you know, like I've had some friends that are like, well, you know, I feel like I can talk to birds and I want to be respectful, but I'm also thinking birds don't fucking talk. And I've also asked my mother, do you like, because I'll make a joke that she's a witch and she'll be like, no, I'm not. But watch yourself, you know? And then finally, for example, that story I told you guys, I told my mother about that. And she was like, for the last time, I don't have powers. You've just always lived in shitty apartments for the last time. Stop telling people I'm a witch. I don't have any powers. Because she explained it like, I feel like it's finally, she's like, that voice is you, you know?
There's another idea that it could be that you and she are so intimately connected just emotionally or on the heart level that she is, you could say, psychically or telepathically or just intuitively picking up on when you're in a bad moment. And her love for you is so big that it interrupts from time to time bad ideas. Like it could just be the connection between the two of you.
I mean, yeah, I mean, because there will be times where I'm feeling like super in the dark and she'll just out of nowhere.
Okay, so what you're telling us is that your mom is a wizard or a guru or...
Everybody's got their thing and hers is just using her love to keep you fucking alive.
But can she use her love to get me a man with a fucking, like, you know, $1 million house?
know? That would be a misuse of her powers.
That's the thing about spirituality. We were just talking about this today in this class I led about when you start to, like, quote unquote, follow the path of the light or, like, practice any kind of spiritual path, you discover that oftentimes the quote unquote spiritual choice or the spiritual direction is not the sexy one. It's not the one that has to do with, like, the hot house and the big dick. It usually has to do with, like, love and support and feeling good about yourself and helping others. And it's annoying to me. I come from such a, I want to say, autonomous, individuality seeking, rebellious, Aquarian place in my own psyche that I had for a long time. I've always been, like, on a spiritual path and pretty into it. But for a long time, I was really resistant to the idea. And I still come up against this in certain ways that spirituality has to mean this kind of, like, sweet, innocent purity thing. Like, I'm like an edgy comedian. I'm not into, like, now we all have to be wearing angel halos and whatever. Perfection is not the thing and all of that. Mm-hmm. But, and the longer I walk, as it were, the spiritual path, the more I see, like, there is more peace in making the choice that serves the greatest good. There is more fulfillment in humility. It does work out better for me, and I do feel better in my body when I'm doing the making the choice of least resistance rather than the one that's about, like, I'm going to push this boulder up this hill no matter what the universe is showing me. Like, all these little spiritual principles that, like, can sound like cliches or that can be easy to resist because they come from religion. And so many of us are like, religion is terrible because of people within religious structures who've done fucked up shit with religion. The older I get, the longer I'm in it, the more I'm like, oh, I see the wisdom in this, like, Christ teaching that I never would have listened to 20 years ago because it came from a guy named Christ. But now I'm like, dude knew what he was talking about. And I don't care anymore because I'm actually just, like, not mad at religion. I'm mad at people within religious structures who use it to control, dominate, manipulate, intimidate, whatever. All that shit is fucked. But those are not the spiritual teachings at the heart of any religion. Those are the damaged individuals leading the religion who are really serving themselves. The Christ guy that was on the planet, if we're going to talk about Christianity for a second, that's just the religion on my mind.
I think I've heard of that one.
You've heard of that one?
I think I heard of that one.
Great. So with that one, that guy, when you read the books he wrote and you read the words that we think maybe he said, none of it was about controlling other bitches. Community and love and being friends and help each other and have a groovy time, do some dancing, sleep with a prostitute. He didn't care. He was a groovy hippie.
Also, okay, so talking about spirituality, there was a night that I did go to do something dangerous, and there was I felt little voices saying, you need to go find that, you know, that dangerous penis. And I was on tour, I was in LA, and there was this very mysterious looking man on the internet. It was like, come to this hotel room, the door will be unlocked for a disgusting good time. And I was like, you know what? Let's risk it. And I went. It was a really shady looking hotel. I was like, am I going to die here? I don't know. And so I went in. Thank God he was really attractive. The sex was insanely great, but a little too great, because the fourth go around, I hurt my shoulder. I'm not as young as I used to be. So I hurt my shoulder. We stop. Turns out he's a great guy. We cuddle. He orders Chinese food. We, like, have a pretty decent time. And so I go home and my shoulder still hurt, and it still hurt. And it was just, like, in a lot, to the point where, like, it's 5 a.m. and I was just walking around my hotel room in the most pain I've ever been in my life. With ice packs, like, hotel staff were bringing me all the Tylenol, ibuprofen they could find. I must have taken more than I should have. Still in pain. My roommate at the time gave me all his pot gummies. Still in pain. I end up in the ER. They treat me like ER people treat you. Like, we don't know what's wrong with you. We're just going to give you morphine. And I kept saying, I don't want fucking morphine. I just want to know what's wrong. And they're like, you have shoulder pain. And I'm like, no, 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 no. I want you guys to look at it though, because they were trying to just give me painkillers and get me the fuck out of there. And I was like, no, I'm not leaving until, because they just were like, look, we're just going to give you painkillers so you can leave. And I was being such a drama queen, I guess, that they finally did the x-rays and they couldn't find anything, because I was like, something's wrong. It's broken or pulled. They do an x-ray and they were like, nothing's wrong with you. You might, it's a nerve. You pinched a nerve. They kept telling me I pinched a nerve, and I was being such a dick that they finally put me through that tube, you know, that tube where they scan everything.
The MRI.
So they finally put me through the tube and they go, oh, and they're like, okay, so your shoulder's fine, but we found some growths in your throat that might be something. And they were like, don't be alarmed. It's probably nothing. And I was like, is it? And they were like, no, yeah, you should get this checked out the second you get home. And so I, of course, got them checked out when I got home. And the doctor was like, how did you even know that you had these growths? They're so inside of you. You're really lucky you caught this, because unless we know that it's hereditary or like it's in your, you know, you're really lucky you caught this now, because it's spread. Like, it's not about to spread. It's like spreading. So we need to do a biopsy like now. And I just, the whole time when you hear news like that, you're just in shock. You're in shock. When you get the call and they say it's cancer, you're in shock. And they kept asking me, how did you even know to look for this? And I finally one time said, I went to a disgusting hotel and had really great gross sex, Olympic style sex, to the point where I hurt my shoulder. And that's how I found the thing. And that's how being a disgusting slut saved my life. So yeah, that's kind of how I but you know, so it's one of those like things where I'm like, something in my body was like, go out, have an adventure. And thank God I did, because I,
and you didn't have a voice saying don't go into that creepy hotel room, which
right,
I would have assumed that's where this story was going.
No, the voice said to go. That's the thing. Yeah. Like, I was trying to listen to that voice. I was like, oh, am I gonna get something in my gut that says, no, don't die, you know, serial killer. But none of those voices were there. The voices were saying, go get that dick. You know, they were like, have adventure. You deserve it.
This is the important point about the voice. If we're listening to like a higher voice or the still small voice or the intuitive voice, it doesn't function from judgment. Humans function from judgment. You shouldn't have sex with a stranger. Well, sometimes, sure you should. Judgment is from us and our minds. The actual divine light is never going to send a judgmental guidance. So of course they were like, your guides or your voices were like, yeah, go fucking fuck that dude, because you need to find out about this neck cancer you're carrying around.
Yeah.
That to me is like the perfect example of how spirituality and religion are not the same thing. And not even just religion, but like twisted religion that is used in twisted ways. Because spirituality is just knowing what you know, knowing how you know it, because the divine is everywhere and it's guiding us and it's talking all the time, and you hear it how you hear it, and Cassidy hears it how he hears it, and my cat hears it how she hears it. Mm-hmm. And it's different for everybody, and there's no right wrong judgment. There's just what's right for you,
right,
and what's true for you. And on that note, I want to thank you a lot, Baruch, for being here. My internet is so bad right now. I'm having a very, very hard time. I'm hearing like every third word everyone says. So I think we're close to our ending time, and I'm going to wrap us up here. But I wanted to say, truly, seriously, from the most sincere part of my heart, I really appreciate your stories. In large part because I think there are a number of people in your camp-ish, people who need to hear people like themselves who aren't fully on board, but aren't against it and somewhere in the middle and don't have terms and aren't into spending a lot of time figuring it out, but like who are having uncanny experiences. People need to know that they're not alone in experiencing stuff like that. So I really appreciate you sharing.
Yeah, and I really appreciate y'all reminding me that I shouldn't not ridicule it, because it's not that I don't respect it. I deeply respect it, but I know that other people will ridicule it. You know what I mean? Because they have, you know, so many of my friends are just like, don't want to hear it. You know what I mean? But it is like when you have, so basically what I'm trying to say is when I hear other people share stories like that, I love hearing it. I'm like, yeah, tell me how you think you heard your grandmother's voice one night, you know, tell me how you thought you saw your grandfather, like, you know, when you were feeling really, really down, because even if it's not true, part of your brain maybe thought you needed to see your grandfather. And that's, I think that's really beautiful. And I don't, you know, I'm the last person to make, I have more fun making fun of Republicans, you know, than people who are spiritual in their own way.
Yeah, I hear you. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for being here tonight. And I'm so glad we could share some of your poetry with the world.
Thank you so much for having me. This was fun. I don't get to talk often about spirituality on podcasts. So thank you.
Fun. My pleasure. We love you. We're setting you off with.
Yep. It is her internet. It's a little chunky.
Yep. She's all frozen.
With love and light. Kisses.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me, you two. Have a good night.
Thanks, Baruch.
Bye. What are you asking for? All of the answers? Say what? All of the answers?
Yeah. All the answers. Hey, guys. Thanks for listening. We'd love to hear from you. Please email us with your questions so that we have questions to answer in the Akashic Records. Our email address is allanswerspod@gmail.com. That's allanswerspod@gmail.com. And if you'd like to find us on Facebook or Twitter, it's @allanswerspod. Thank you.
That even if there is no God, at least you are talking to yourself and saying nice things.
That was a Sounds Awesome production.